And so it begins. 2 hours of open lines. And I will pretty much leave it to your discretion where you want to steer this ship clear on into morning. But let me just throw this log on the fire. I wondered about after-death experiences or near-death experiences. If you've had one or you know someone who's had one, would love to hear from you. A man who claimed to have stood on the brink of death, this is in the United Kingdom, said he faced God himself before the pearly gates. But does life after death really exist? The man said he spoke to God after he was left to die in a horrific knife attack back in 1976, in which he suffered a punctured lung and internal bleeding. The incredible account was shared by a man known only as Michael W. with the Near Death Experience Research Foundation, the NDERF. Michael claimed the brutal stabbing left him fighting for his life as a Good Samaritan passerby rushed him to the hospital when he claims he left his body and felt the presence of God. He said, "I could see the car below, and then I became aware of the light. It was the biggest, brightest, most all-encompassing light ever. I've come to realize there is no shadow in his presence. I became very aware of people, vaguely familiar people from my past, but they moved by at a distance, just beyond my recognition. I was being drawn into the light source, as if in a tunnel." Sound familiar? Michael then said he heard the voice of God asking him if he was ready to move on to the afterlife, or he would rather continue living. After he told God he was not ready to move on, the heavenly voice supposedly said, "Don't worry, everything will be okay." Of course, Michael is not the first person who's claimed to have seen or heard God on their deathbed. A man who has claimed to have temporarily died said he traveled through time and space, finding knowledge in the deepest, darkest corners of the universe. A 4-year-long study across 15 hospitals in the UK, the US, and Austria found about 39% of 140 patients who suffered cardiac arrest had vague memories of the time they were unconscious. 39%. An analysis of the study conducted by the National Health Service in the UK concluded people on their deathbed might have simply retained some form of consciousness if their brain is oxygenated enough. Again, the National Health Service said overall this study provides no evidence to support the existence of an afterlife, merely that people near death may still have memorable experiences. A common thread throughout these bizarre stories is that none of these people claim to have died and returned to the living, but rather endured so-called near-death experiences, which are typically associated with out-of-body memories, feelings of levitation, seeing light and hearing voices during moments of cardiac arrest, and other forms of impending death. The science surrounding these events is inconclusive, but points towards NDEs being misinterpreted as religious or spiritual. So says this article. What say you? Have you had an NDE? Do you know someone who has died and come back? Let's discuss when Coast to Coast continues. Open lines are next. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie, coming to you live from Coast Toronto, Canada affiliate, in-depth radio News Talk 1010. We're talking about NDEs and just about anything else, but let's begin with that. David is a first-time caller checking in from Georgia. David, good morning.
Good morning, Richard.
Hi there.
How are you tonight?
I'm terrific. How about yourself?
I'm better than some and worse than many.
That's a good way to be. What do you got for us, David?
Well, I've been in several near-death motorcycle accidents.
Several?
First in 1979, where I was on a friend's motorcycle, and I hit a culvert, realized it too late, and I flew through the air around 68 feet, and it knocked me unconscious, Richard. And believe it or not, you talked about levitation. I started floating up, and I saw my body laying in the soybean field I landed in. I saw the roof of a tobacco barn that was in the field, and and I saw light, and then I woke up in the field, paralyzed from the waist down. I was sent to Statesboro Hospital, which was real near where the accident was, near Brooklet, Georgia. I didn't stay there, but a couple of days they sent me to Eugene Talmadge Memorial in Augusta, where I stayed almost 6 months with nothing working from the waist down. And they told me I'd never walk again. Well, I'm very strong-willed, and I did come out of the hospital walking.
You came out of the hospital walking, and by the sounds of it, you got up, you got back on another hog and had another NDE.
I did. In 2013, it was a while before I rode a motorcycle again because I was in a several body casts and then a Jewett hyperextension brace, so I stayed off of them for a while. But once the motorcycle thing's in you, it's kind of in you. You get hooked like a fish. So I got lucky while working for Bombardier Aerospace in Tucson, Arizona, and I won the Fantasy Five lottery, and I bought a brand new 2002 Fat Boy with the money. And I got laid off from there and made it back to Georgia. I was going to work one morning for Georgia Pacific, a recycle plant in Rincon, Georgia. On the way there, a lady on a cell phone pulled out. She ran a stop sign, ran the medium. All I saw was the lights of her Jeep SUV. I hit her on that Fat Boy going about 75 miles an hour.
Dear Lord.
She turned, and I hit her at an oblique angle just forward of the rear tire. I busted out her back window with my helmet in my head. Georgia is a helmet stater. I would not be talking to you right now. I remember everything slows down in an accident, especially one that traumatic, and you see, unbelievably, your life goes by in a flash, which mine did that morning. I slid forward on the passenger side of her vehicle, the Jeep SUV, and my left elbow took off her rearview mirror. When me and the Fat Boy broke loose from her, we hit the pavement, and I was knocked out. I woke up 5 days later in Memorial Hospital in Savannah, Georgia. Lucky to be alive, 37 fractures, all my ribs and my left lung inside collapsed it. I got metal holding most of the left-hand side of my body together. And
did you have an NDE during this horrific accident?
Yes, I didn't see a light. This one, I didn't go up. I just got knocked out. But yeah, I wasn't supposed to live. The state, my mom showed up, and she said the state patrol that investigated the accident came every day just to see if I was going to die, so they would charge the woman that did this to me with involuntary manslaughter. Well, I lived. I had another motorcycle waiting on me when I healed up, and believe it or not, June the 22nd this year, a deer pulled out in front of me, or jumped out in front of me, and that was my last ride. I'm done with motorcycles, but yeah, I know what it's like to almost die. It's surreal. It's hard to explain.
All those cliches about your life flashing before your eyes, everything slowing down, it's all true, isn't it?
It is. It happens. It sure is. Like a movie, almost, of your whole life goes instantly right by your vision. And in the accident, it slows down to slow motion. I remember every detail, and it's hard to explain, Richard.
Are you finally done with motorcycles, David?
I'm done. I'll never ride a motorcycle again. I'm somewhat hard-headed, but it finally got me.
Well, that hard-headedness may have also saved your life. David, thank you so much for sharing. Great story.
Thank you.
Thank you. West of the Rockies, Tom is in Riverside, California. Tom, good morning, good evening. Welcome to Coast.
Hello, Richard. Thanks for taking my call. And I just wanted to comment on, your guest before and the last caller. I'm not a young person, and I've been in this country and haven't went anywhere around the world at all. I have never left a country. And it seems extremely obvious to me that something has happened to our government over the last 50-some years. And it seems though that a lot of people think that, they preach patriotism, they preach, go defend our country's freedom and to our military. And our military really isn't our military anymore. As far as I'm concerned, it seems obvious that we're not really in control of our government anymore. It seems very obvious, and it seems like people have, of course, the younger people don't really, remember America as it was, in the 50s and 60s. And they've lost touch they didn't lose touch. It was never savvy to them what came before them. And the country has opened up prisons around the world to interrogate people. I'm not. Yeah, that's not American to me. That's not the way I was brought up. Is America supposed to torture people in prisons across the seas? Is that the way it is? The government has stopped the draft. In the 70s when that being kicked around, I thought that was a so good idea.
Tom, you're fading out on me here. Your phone is fading
problem.
Out. You said something about ending the draft.
Yeah, the draft shouldn't be ended. The draft should be reinstated is what I'm really saying is. That's one problem. But, I mean, here's the problem. We're not in control of our government anymore, and I don't blame Russia. It seems to me, as an American, never been out of the country. I was raised in Indiana, and, in the middle of this country. Why should I feel this way? But Kennedy was shot in the head when I was maybe 10 years old. I remember that. I was Catholic. Of course, that was a direct assault on her, on me and the people around me. And the 9/11 is proof, Richard, what's his name?
You're fading out on me again, Tom. So I'm sorry. I'll respond, but then I'm going to have to move on. And thank you for the call. Well, before Kennedy, there was McKinley, and there was Garfield, and there was Lincoln, and there were multiple attempts on other presidents. I don't know that certainly something changed since Kennedy. But has much changed? I think once the United States sort of grew up and matured and became a major player, certainly after the Civil War, after the First World War, and began to engage in multilateral trade organizations and did all of those things that some of the founding fathers sort of warned against. Foreign entanglements, I think, is what they called it. These sorts of games, dirty wars and so forth, are almost inevitable when you become entangled in other countries' business and you put yourself out there, you end up fighting wars on foreign lands so that those wars don't visit upon your own soil. And yes, it's nasty and it's dirty, but one thing that the United States has, I think, that most other countries don't have, and that is the power of redemption. And I'm a Canadian, so I'm a bit of an interloper. but I have strong emotional ties to the United States, and I believe strongly in the idea of the United States, and I believe in American exceptionalism. It hasn't been fulfilled, perhaps the way we'd like it. But the United States, yes, they have been involved. If you talk about Allende in Chile and the overthrow of the government in Iran in 1953 and in Guatemala and so forth, this isn't peculiar to the United States. Most other countries that have the kind of power and responsibility that the United States has, they do the same thing. But they don't reflect upon those dark chapters in their history the way the United States does. They don't talk about it on public forums. They can't. They're not allowed. And there's no redemption, at least in the United States, that exists. We reflect, we write, we shun, and we try to make ourselves better. And I think we should all be thankful for that. Tom, thank you for your call. Doug is east of the Rockies in the great state of New Jersey. Doug, welcome.
Thank you very much. How are you this evening?
I'm well, thank you.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm going to go a little bit off topic here. I had tried getting on some time ago. There was a guest host in, such as yourself, and they were talking about a climate change and warming and the risings of the ocean. Now, I'm not going to go either way with the pro or cons on global warming or anything like that. But they're talking about how the seas and the oceans are rising, which that is fact. It is measurable. They can tell that. But I was wondering, I've never heard anybody take into consideration water displacement. Every year we put billions upon billions upon billions of vessels in the water, whether they be military, whether it be giant multi-million-dollar cruise ships, submarines. We are sinking subways out here on the East Coast to make artificial reefs. We're sinking old military. Now, this is taking up space, and I know that Hawaii's been having a volcano that hasn't stopped for some time, and that's also taking, not taking up water, but it's adding land. And I would think if anybody, do you know if any of the guests that you've had on or heard speak about this ever brought up the theory of water displacement?
No, not that I'm aware of. I think the type of sea level rise that they're talking about isn't about, you know, the ice melting that's in the water, because, you know, what happens when ice cubes melt in a glass, the water doesn't overflow. We're talking about bits of ice shelves breaking off and so forth. But water levels, sea levels have been rising for a very long time. We're in a kind of a transglacial period. We're coming out of an ice age. We're still technically in an ice age. We have ice at the North and South Poles. We haven't always had ice at the North and South Poles. So ice is melting. We're coming out of a glacial period, and water levels have been rising and will continue to rise, and I think it's normal. But water displacement, we'll have someone on to talk about that. Thank you. Cat Stevens taking us into the break with Sitting here on Coast to Coast. More open lines when we continue. We'll get back to open lines in just a moment. I just want to tell you about a new event coming your way in 2019. George Norrie, he's back. He's better than ever and returning to historic Everett Theater in Everett, Washington on Saturday, March the 23rd, 2019. He returns to, again, the beautiful historic Everett Theater for an amazing show with special guests, the director of the UFO Reporting Center, Peter Davenport, esoteric researcher, Johnny Enoch, afterlife expert in near-death experience, Daniel Brinkley, who's been hit by lightning and officially dead for over 28 minutes. And an expert on mysticism, prophecy, and the occult, rogue scholar John Hoag, plus a live band, audience participation, and a meet and greet to follow. Again, Saturday, March the 23rd, George Norrie Live at the historic Everett Theater in Everett, Washington. And you can buy tickets online. Just go to coasttocoastam.com and go to the Events tab. Click on that George Norrie Events. All the details are right there. Back with more Open Lines right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast AM. We're talking near-death experiences and much more during our Open Lines segment. Let's go to Dan in Granite Falls, Washington. Hey, Dan, welcome. Good morning.
Hello, Richard. Yes, it's a near-death the last many days. My ailments are many. And I had an epiphany today. I saw something very important.
All right. What did you see?
I got up for one thing. I've been in bed so much. And I went through a gamut of emotions. I was listening to old music, 80s, even Ronnie Millsap. And I looked at the two pictures of the two little girls I have on my wall. They're sent to me from St. Jude long ago, Gracie and Rowan. And I looked at them and I just kind of broke down, and I've never been able to be Christian my whole life, and I've never been able to handle the pain in it. Like, came home today to me, and even though I suffer, I have such terrible health problems, and I said, Father, and there's a picture of Jesus, and I said, Father, these little ones cannot suffer anymore. This cannot go on. What's this supposed to, this is going to go on for years and decades, hundreds of years? And I said, it can't go on. And I felt the calmness. I looked at the pictures. I couldn't believe it. I haven't smiled in days. And I smiled. And the Father was saying to me, it's not going to go on. It's going to end. He said, people just don't know that it's going to end very soon. They're going to be standing in place, was his message. They're going to be standing, laying, or sitting in their place, and they're not going to know that this comes upon them if they're not ready for me. And that's what's coming. That's my end.
That's what
up.
We believe. Like a thief in the night, he will come. Like a thief in the night.
25 years, and was never diagnosed with HIV. I was one of those. I was lucky that I'd been alive this long, but when I went in, the doctors didn't say you have HIV. They said, I went in like not feeling good, and they said, you have AIDS. And I said, AIDS? You know, this is crazy. But they go, yeah, that's what you have. And I calculated, and I'm so grateful to the people of the United States, of the world, really. People don't think people like me aren't grateful. I've taken I've got a number here. I've taken around 120,000 pills. 120,000.
Over 25 years.
Yes.
It's kept you alive.
And it's kept me alive. And of all things, the liver didn't go, the heart's bad, and the lungs are bad, but I ended up getting prostate cancer. But I looked at these girls today, and I've had these two girls are stuck to the thermostat. I don't have any pictures because I've always been, like, packed and ready to leave this earth. But I stuck them in this thermostat along with a picture of Jesus is top left, Gracie's lower left, Rowan's upper right, and Mary's lower right. And he just brought it over to me, and he said, they're not going to suffer much longer. It's going to stop. He's telling me it's going to stop even before you go, even before I go. And I think it ties into geopolitics that's going on today, and I really do believe that maniacs, and I don't want to use the cliche of the deep state. I would call them... the maniacal money whores, if I can say that online. They're the maniacal money whores of the world. They're going to bring it about. because they have said to China and Russia, the two holdouts, Iran, of course, is a satellite state, and they've said, you are going to bow down to us, and you are going to accept our ways, you're going to accept our corporations and all of our norms, or there's going to be a war. And Putin, yesterday, most Americans missed it when he said, did you catch that, Richard? When he said, Russians, when the war comes, if we get attacked, he said, we're going to go to heaven because Russia is now a state.
I did catch that. That's right. That's right.
Said, you Americans and the Westerners, he said, you will just drop dead where you stand.
He said, there'll be no time to repent. Yeah, I heard that. Pretty dire warning.
About the girls, and the girls and the father said,
yep.
They're not going to suffer. The suffering is going to end very, very soon.
All right, Dan, thank you so much for sharing that. That's a dire warning, but also really a testament to your courage. 25 years you've endured this suffering, and I appreciate you calling in and sharing that story with us. Joe is in Monterey, California. Joe, good morning.
Good morning, Richard. Thank you for taking my call. Okay, I do a lot of healing work, soul travel, healing work. And some of my clients, I get them to travel out of the body to their past lives. Actually, it's called spiritual regression or a spiritual travel. They're not using their astral body. They're using their soul or conscious. It's a super conscious mind. That's what soul is, in a very high state. As for the process of crossing over, usually people come to a gateway, and they are met either by their guide or maybe a family member. If they don't cross over, they will either told to go back, or maybe they may talk to someone, and they usually come back into the body, you know, near death, not a full death experience. But there are books written about life between lives, is what which I do, life between lives. Although most people don't do that, they don't call on me to help them do that. They rather do some healing work. And some of the things that we do is work with angels and archangels and their healers and sometimes their guides. So as far as do we continue to live? Yes, we do. More importantly, we can experience heaven. We can experience what it's like to cross over without dying by going through some kind of spiritual regression and going into life between lives. And it's extremely liberating, and you do get to see what your life's purpose, what you're supposed to be doing here. You meet a council who interview you. You go through a kind of a healing and preparation with your guide before you meet councils and before you go any places, any other places, because you will meet your soul family and other beings that you make contact with. And yes, you can see your records. This is when you're in what people call heaven. And it's really heaven. It's a very powerful experience. And when people feel a presence when they're at the gate, it's usually the light of heaven. And yes, people dwell within this light when they go through the what we call the gateway. And you start to acclimate yourself in that world, and there's a lot of telepathic communication, so there's no facade, so to speak. There's no lying, because people know each other. You know, they know who you are at the soul level, because you're soul.
Right. Joe, let me ask you a couple of questions. You believe in reincarnation.
I work with that a lot.
All right. How long, yes, typically does someone spend in this life between lives before they reincarnate?
Now, that varies within the individual, and you don't immediately come back. You go through a process, meet your guides, you find out what life you would like to, they will suggest certain things to you that you could work on. And you could come back, since there's no time up there, so to speak, because everything's in the eternal now. You can also go into a past life or a future life. You could skip years or centuries.
Right. And you believe that we choose, for example, the circumstances under which we will reincarnate. We for example, we choose our parents. We choose our life circumstances.
This is a whole big process that you work out with your guide and your teachers, that you are shown certain things. You go to a place of learning where you learn many things, but you also go to an archival room where you can view your life and what you did, what you didn't do, what you did do, and you can assess what you would like to accomplish. And you also have a guide who's your teacher and a healer who will advise you. But you also go to another area when you do pick a life, because they will suggest several lives that you can choose, because you're working on patterns of growth, spiritual growth. It's not a punishment coming here, it's an opportunity. So in this, what they call a ring, you will see your life, all the different events that you choose, this one or that one, whichever you could get to pick, because you can pick, and your guide will advise you, well, you could view some of that life, and yes, you do get to choose, and when you do reincarnate, it's your soul family that may have been, they switch roles, depending upon what their learning experiences are. So you can come back with several of the people that you've been living or incarnated from a previous life.
Here's the problem I have sort of philosophically with that. And is it possible that we reincarnate? I suppose. I don't happen to believe it. That's just me. But here's one of the things that sort of bothers me about that situation, and that is, if we in fact we choose our circumstances, why would someone choose, for example, to reincarnate into a life that leads ultimately to physical abuse? Doesn't that almost place the burden on the victim in that case, saying, well you chose that life?
Okay, there are certain experiences that we learn from. And yes, I understand where you're going, and I really do feel for the people that do choose a life like that. It is a way of learning certain things. And please remember, we do have free will. And there are times when people will advise us in the physical to get out of those relationships. If it's a pattern that a person has to learn from, then they may have to go through it, but there's always the chance that they can leave those relationships or leave. I understand that when a child is young, there's no place they could run to, because if it's parents' abuse, and there are circumstances where they live under most horrendous circumstances. Yes, this is a tragedy to begin with, yet what we're learning, what we're overcoming, and that's the whole key here, is to overcome those abuses. And also, it's for the parents, if it's a parent abuse or other types of abuse, they have the opportunity to overcome that as well. And usually, if it's a long-term relationship, they might have agreed to do that, both of them, that this is the role that they will take. And it's up to those two people to come to some kind of resolution of their behavior, that they have to rise above that particular pattern. So we can see the negative of it, but there are cases where people rise above themselves and they become a hero in their own life because of the person that they may have abused, if they've been abusing. They may educate them somehow. So there's always hope here. And yes, we do have guides and angels that do help us. It is up to the individual to draw upon that help. We need to call on that help, our angels and guides.
All right, Joe, thank you for that. Fran is on the wildcard line. She's in Clearwater, Florida. Franna?
Yes, thank you for taking my call, Richard. 3 weeks ago, I asked your help in winning a new roof.
Oh, yes.
Remember?
I do.
Okay, well, I'm calling back to thank you and the Coast listeners who were so kind in calling in. I got messages from them and a lot of votes. In 8 hours' time, after talking with you, in 8 hours, I went from 11% to 51% of the vote.
You got the new roof.
Uh-huh.
You got the new roof, Rana?
And
you got the new roof? You did.
Yes. It's being put on the 27th of October, which is just a week and a half away, well, barely a week away. It's just wonderful. And I want to thank you for your generosity. When I got nervous when you were interviewing me, you supported what I was saying so well and so beautifully that I think it helped in the message getting across. You were very, very kind and very generous in how you handled it.
Well, congratulations, Frana. I'm pleased. And, of course, you know, those people that own the houses surrounding you that didn't get a new roof, I pray that some money will come their way as well, and they'll also get new roofs. We don't want winners and losers. We want all winners.
I realize that, but mine was about to fall in. It really is a desperate situation, and I'm so grateful.
I remember the call, and I remember you were in dire straits after caring for parents and grandparents and so forth. So I'm so pleased for you, Fran.
I loved every bit of that. I didn't regret anything. I would have done it anyway, regardless of what happened. So that was
well. That's such great news, Franna. Thank you so much for sharing, and congratulations on the new roof. And I hope you enjoy it and your home for many, many years to come.
I hope to see a Coast listener show up, maybe. Any of the ones that voted for me that live in the area in Clearwater, it'll be on the computer where to go for the 27th. And I'd love to be able to hug somebody that voted for me.
Oh, well, God bless you. Well, I'm sure they're listening.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for giving that update. I'm sure they are they're listening. They know who they are, and I'm sure they're feeling pretty good about the whole situation. All right, we're going to head on into the break. Top of the hour, one more hour of open lines to come. We can continue to talk about near-death experiences or, well, just about anything you want. When Coast to Coast continues right after this.